to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is New Comics Wednesday for February 14th, 2018, Valentine's Day. A great day to go down and pick up your comics at your local comic shop. But before we get into the books that I want to talk about this week, I just want to mention that the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus Kickstarter has now crossed the 75% mark. It's actually at 75.5% as I record this. There's 22 days left. Again, for those not familiar, we did a special. I'm going to play a little clip for you from that special from Jeremy Dale's wife when she was gracious enough to come on the podcast and talk about the book and what it contains and what it means to her and all that. So go ahead and give it a listen and then go pledge.
Well, you mentioned Skyward. I mentioned it as well. You know, I've talked about it on the other podcast. But maybe some of our listeners aren't that familiar. So why don't you tell them what Skyward's all about?
Sure. For those of you that don't know, Skyward is one of those all-ages light fantasy adventure about a boy and his dog that need to unite the entire world against the dark army of the Brother Kings. If you like things like Legends of Zelda or like Lord of the Rings, it's right up your alley. This is a little less like adult than something like Game of Thrones.
Why don't you let us know what this Kickstarter that you have going, and there will be a link in the show notes and all this information, everyone, so don't worry. But why don't you tell us, Kelly, what the Kickstarter is actually going to be funding?
Okay, so because we're talking Skyward, Jeremy created Skyward to be an ongoing series. I mean, he had this sucker planned out until at least issue 50. And it kind of saddens me that you guys don't get to see what his grand idea was. But he left issue 9 on such a cliffhanger that I felt like it was my responsibility as his good wife, as well as a fan of Skyward, to at least bring out an issue 10. So that way it will give us all a little bit of closure. Now, it doesn't actually end the series. So in your imagination, you can keep it going. And if I ever decide to do anything with it later in maybe another medium, then I can. But this will give all the fans a little bit of closure. So issue 10 is going to be a 32-page issue. I took Jeremy's ideas for issue 10, and I went to our friend Barbara Kessel, the comic writer and editor, and she actually developed a script that works. Shannon Gallant, amazing man that he is, also a G.I. Joe artist, drew the entire issue. And now it's at The Colors with Catherine Leno and Laura Martin. And what I decided to do was, I don't want there just to be an issue 10 and that's it. So I did a Kickstarter for the Jeremy Dale Skyward Omnibus. So that Omnibus is going to cover issues 1 through 9, plus you'll get issue 10 in there. And you're going to get all of the variant cover arts by all the different artists Jeremy had, such as Phil Noto, Darwin Cook, Stefan Rue, Tom Zoller, Mike Norton, David Peterson. I mean, it's a huge list.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about kind of the business end of Kickstarter, because I know people sometimes don't realize the way that it works. And, you know, even though it's only been a week or so and it's already at 57%, I know a lot of times there's a lot of excitement early on and you know, it gets to 80 or 90% and it kind of dies out. So if you're planning on pledging, do it sooner than later, because it doesn't get produced unless it gets to 100%. So,
yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you brought this up, because some people don't realize when it comes to Kickstarter, you can pledge whatever you want. Like, you can do an incentive. Your card, your credit card, is not charged until we hit our end date, which is March 8th. And if we hit the 100%, if we hit that $20,000 or we're above it. So if you're thinking about, well, I would really like to donate or do an incentive, but I don't get paid until next week, that's fine. Just go ahead and grab the incentive, especially if it's one of the ones that there's only one of. Grab it now. You're not actually going to be charged until March 8th.
Yeah, and it's so easy. We're all so busy. It's so easy to forget. So do it. Open another tab right now while you're listening to this, or if you're in the car, you know, as soon as you get where you're going, as soon as you finish listening to the podcast. Yeah. Don't get on your phone while you're driving, but yeah, do it sooner than later, because it's really easy to forget. So,
And truthfully, the reception has been amazing so far, and the outpouring of love and support has been amazing. But until we hit this 20,000, even though I'm very confident that we will, I'm going to still be like a little anxious and freaking out. So please don't let Kelly freak out.
All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging in. Hope you all go and pledge if you haven't already. Let's go ahead and get into the books that I want to talk about this week. The first book I'm going to mention is Baby Teeth number 8 from Aftershock Comics. And this is written by writer Donnie Cates, who's been a pretty popular creator. His star is really on the rise. He's been very much in demand, writing Thanos over at Marvel, Redneck title, I believe it's called, at Image, as well as God Country, which has been a very popular title from Image as well. So he's writing this horror comic for Aftershock. It's called Baby Teeth. I think kind of Rosemary's Baby. It's kind of the premise here. A teen has given birth, and there are some that believe that her child is the Antichrist. So when I first read it, a little heavy on the religion, just kind of the premise, and it kind of turned me off. But you know, I know what a strong writer Donnie Cates is, so I kind of stuck with it, and I'm glad I did, because it's kind of started to go a little more mainstream comic story, if you know what I mean. Just it's starting to get to the point where it's, you know, I'm not feeling like it's being preachy at all. I kind of felt that a little in the first three episodes, but it's going into more of like the secret societies and the different factions that, you know, have the belief that this child is the Antichrist and such. So it's this particular issue, the girl has been taken to the secret city, I guess, or secret little town, this little hideaway in Maine where one of the factions lives called The Way. And she finds out that her mother, who ran off many years ago, actually runs this place. And her mother gives her kind of the lowdown about what exactly is going on. And again, it just kind of gives it a more grounded feel, and it starts to make more sense. And as I said, it's not like these are completely original ideas. You know, we've seen them done before, and in a way that's kind of a good thing. In a way, it does kind of make it feel like, okay, this is a story that I sort of know, but I know Donnie Cates is going to take it in different directions. And, you know, he's got a flair for dialogue, and there's some witty banter going on. And so that's all great as well. It's coming back to that more familiar place. And as I said, it doesn't feel preachy. And there's the little details that really make it great. Just the interaction between the characters, the little connections that we find out. I mean, it's very much a family book in a way about this particular family. Plus, there's like a demon raccoon that seems to be pretty awesome, pretty powerful. So it's hard to find fault with that. Yeah, I think it's a good title, maybe verging on a great title. Started off a little slow, but I just wasn't feeling it. And I really feel like right around issue 4 to 5, it really started picking up steam. And now, as I said, with the backstory and with some of the plot twists that Cates is introducing, it's like, wow, I definitely am going to keep reading this. Really want to know what happens. I love the way he's tied these characters together. And they don't even realize, like, a lot of this family doesn't realize the way that they're, some of the other characters in the book are related to them. And plus, it's told from the perspective of the mother of the little boy. And what's interesting about that is, so she's kind of flashing back, right? She's telling this story to her son in the future. And so that kind of gives it a different feel in a way. It gives kind of some structure to the story, and it helps to, I don't know, give us an end goal. I imagine that Kate has an ending in mind. So the other interesting thing is, being that the mother, young mother, Sadie is her name, is telling the story and kind of leaving this video message she recorded on her cell phone. She's leaving this message, this kind of journal for her son. Does the story end with the end of Sadie's story? Like, is she recording and telling her son, you know, recording this for her future son and telling him what happened his early days of his life because she's planning on having some kind of ending, or she's not going to be there to tell him in person? Does the story continue when her part is done? Is this her story? Is it the family story? Is it the son's story? So all that is yet to be determined. I don't know what Donny Cates' long-term plans for the series are, but Baby Teeth from Aftershock, it's a pretty good title. If you're into the whole end-of-the-world, antichrist kind of stories, I'm sure it's right up your alley. Those aren't my favorite kind of stories, but as I said, Cates has managed to suck me in, so definitely going to keep reading. All right, next book I'm going to talk about is Dark Knights, The Wild Hunt, number one, from Scott Snyder, Grant Morrison, James Tynan IV, and Joshua Williamson as writers. The artists are Howard Porter, Jorge Jimenez, Doug Monkey with Jaime Mendoza. And we have colors from Hi-Fi, Alejandro Sanchez, and Will Quintana. So this is an interesting title because originally it wasn't on the checklist for the Dark Knights Metal event. Greg Capullo got sick and needed time off. They gave him a skip month, which is February, and then they moved Dark Knights Metal 6 back to March. So I find that really interesting because I kind of expected this issue to be not as important, to feel like a fill-in to some extent. You know, we'd heard that, okay, it's Dark Knights Rising, The Wild Hunt, and it's going to be, you know, more backstory about the actual evil versions of Batman, other members of the Justice League matchup. You know, there's a Batman Joker, a Batman Flash, a Batman Green Lantern, a Batman Aquaman, a Batman Wonder Woman, all these different characters. And so I didn't necessarily expect it to be as pertinent and as big a part of the story as it turns out to be. I mean, this seems like it was planned from the beginning. So I don't know if they shifted things around or what exactly they did, but this is certainly not any kind of fill-in issue just to, you know, give Capullo more time to finish six. It's vitally important to the story, the things that happen here. That being said, I liked it. Manny, unfortunately, who couldn't be here tonight, did not like it for a couple reasons, and I'll actually get into the reasons that he didn't like it in a minute. But I feel like it fits in perfectly with what Snyder and Capullo and the rest of the creators on this event have been doing so far. It doesn't, as I said, feel like, okay, well, that was added in after, you know, that wasn't planned on. And so I feel like it fits in, and there's a couple of really cool moments in it. And so for that reason, I kind of liked it. I think there's something about it that one particular idea or theme that, as I said, it fits in with what's been going on in metal all along. And in a way, that's what maybe one of Manny's complaints was. And then the ending, of course. So I'm not going to get too into the story and what happens. Again, it follows along nicely with what's been going on in metal. It seems to be very important. It's bringing back on the stage some more obscure characters that we haven't seen in the metal series in a while. You know, they showed up at the very beginning. What's interesting is how long this is taking to play out, and how I've talked a lot in the past about how top-heavy it was, front-loaded with a lot of issues. And now we're getting less content, and so in a way it feels like it's dragging out. So it'd be interesting to read it all together in one read and see how it flows. They tend to feel a little, toward the end anyway, a little compartmentalized. And it's hard to think back, okay, wait, what happened in the very beginning now? So, as I said, it'll be interesting to go back at some point. The art, it's pretty solid for the most part. I mean, they're all good artists. If there's any problem I have with it, it's just the fact that there are so many different artists on the book that it didn't pull me out of the story, but it's noticeable, right? You're like, oh, here's where the art shifts from whoever, you know, from Porter to Jimenez to Monkey. But it, I mean, they're all solid. It's all good art. It's just I wish it was a little more consistent. I wish just they could have got just one artist to work on it. But that's fine. As far as the moments I liked, there's some good moments with the different Batman Dark Knights, the evil versions of Batman, interacting with each other. Say they're not outright hostile toward each other, but they're kind of out for themselves in a way that there's no love lost, I guess you'd say. There's a couple of cool moments with Flash that harken back to the classic Crisis on Infinite Earth crossover with Flash sacrificing himself to save the universe. So there's a sequence of events that happens here that made me think of that. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. And then there's the ending, which, again, I don't want to spoil it here because a lot of you may not have read it yet. Maybe you're listening to this on the way to the comic shop. But let me just say that there's a certain type of trope in comics that supposedly more of this one particular kind of thing that shows up in comics, people are like, some people think it can never be enough. Give me more of this and it just makes a better comic. There are other people who just don't go in for that at all. That's Manny. You know, just like, are you kidding me? Is this what's going to save the day? That's going to be really dumb. I'm going to feel like I wasted my whole time reading this huge crossover. So we were introduced to the idea of an Earth 53, which nobody seems to really understand. Like, why is there an Earth 53? And these people, these heroes from that Earth show up, and maybe they'll be the ones to save the day. And just the nature of them, it just, for some reason, it bothered Manny. For me, I don't go in for that kind of thing a whole heck of a lot. But if it's a good story, it's a good story. It does bring it down a little bit in my estimation. It'd be nice to see them do something else. But, if it's a good story, it's a good story. So only one issue to go, Dark Knights Metal number 6, and it'll all be wrapped up. I would love to get, I don't want to say director's cuts of all the series, but I'd love to get some kind of trade or hardback that at least had like an essay or something in there from Snyder and the rest of the writers saying, you know, here's what we were doing at this point in the story. Here's what we're doing at that point in the story. Just because it has so much history of the DC universe, so many little Easter eggs and things that it pulls in, that it would be interesting to know what the thought process of the writers was during this event. Crisis on Infinite Earths was kind of like that in a way, because it pulled in so many different characters and so much history, and some of the characters were there for just a panel, you know, maybe even just in the background of a panel, but at least they were there, at least they were acknowledged, and obviously they were there on purpose. And, you know, people have been doing annotated Crisis on Infinite Earth podcasts and hardcovers and all that kind of stuff for years, and it's been over 30 now since Crisis on Infinite Earth came out. So I don't think that we need to go to that extent with Metal, but it'd be interesting to see if it stands the test of time. And it certainly could use, you know, one of those books like that. I don't need to know absolutely everything, but I more just want to understand the process and what the writers were thinking. So look forward to that at some point. I'm sure DC will take advantage. So next book I'm going to talk about, also from DC Comics, and kind of leads directly from what I was just talking about. It's Mr. Miracle number 1, Director's Cut, written by Tom King, art by Mitch Gerrits and Mike Norton, and colors by Jordi Belair. So the Mike Norton art that's colored by Jordi Belair is actually the opening sequence. It's the first couple of pages in the book, and it's a sequence that wasn't in the original Mr. Miracle number 1, the first issue of the Maxi series that's coming out from DC right now. And it's basically an origin story of Mr. Miracle. So for anyone who's not familiar but has been picking up the title or has been thinking about picking it up, this is a great place to start. Pick up this director's cut. You can get the origin of Mr. Miracle. And then it's, other than that, it's just a reprint of issue 1 with one exception. It doesn't have, it's mostly in black and white. Mitch Gerrits' art is mostly in black and white. There's a little color here and there, but for the most part, it's black and white, which really shows his rendering. and his line work, which is pretty solid. It's gorgeous looking art, and I feel it's even more impactful with the little tiny bit of color that is there and the rest of the coloring gone. I love it. I love this. Love being able to see Mitch Garrett's art in this way. Also in the back of the book, there's the full script for Mr. Miracle number one. So if you've never seen what a comic script looks like and you want to check it out, again, I highly recommend picking this up. You can get even more information in a way from reading the, you know, text of the script, see what's kind of going on in Tom King's mind as much as any of us will understand what's going on in that crazy man's mind. Hi, Tom. I know you're not listening, but throw that out there. So it's a good insight, and you get a little more out of the story by being able to have that script there. So I think it's definitely worthwhile. I know that Mr. Miracle number one, fourth printing, just came out last week. So, I mean, this is a little bit pricey, being that it's 48 pages? Yeah, 48 pages, I believe. So it is a little pricey, $5.99, so a dollar more than the regular issue, but definitely worth having, in my opinion. And if you want to know more about Manny and my thoughts on Mr. Miracle series, issue 6 came out recently. So those first 6 issues, we covered that in our 9-panel grid podcast we do for LRM Online, the one that came out just this last Tuesday, actually. So yesterday, as this podcast is being released. So you can go and find that at lrmonline.com. All right, next up, it's another DC book. It's Shade the Changing Girl and Wonder Woman Special, written by Cecil Castellucci, with art by Mirka Andolfo, and the colors are done by Marissa Louise. So this is part 3 of the Milk Wars, which is the Doom Patrol Justice League of America crossover. And Gerard Way and Steve Orlando are kind of the architects of this crossover. Now, I actually stopped reading Doom Patrol. It's just not my particular cup of tea. It's a little too out there for my taste. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. I think it serves a purpose. I think it has a place in the marketplace. I know there's a lot of people out there that really love it. But it's just, like I said, it's just not my cup of tea. It's not my thing. That being said, I have been reading the Milk Wars crossover, and it's been okay in my mind. It's not, again, it's just not my thing. It's not my favorite kind of storytelling. It's very abstract in a way and very surreal, and it just doesn't grab me. That being said, it's interesting enough. I'm going to finish reading it, and this is part 3. And for those not familiar with the story, so basically what's happened is there's this evil corporation that is brainwashing heroes, kind of taking them off the board by having them drink milk all the time. Like, this milk has some kind of properties that alter the reality or alter these heroes' perception. So we've seen it done with Superman and some of the other Justice Leaguers. We saw it in part 2 with Batman, and now we're seeing it in this issue with Wonder Woman and Shade the Changing Girl as well. But Shade is actually the one who begins to realize that something's just not right, that Wonder Woman could be so much more, because the premise that the milk is the reality, maybe is a better way to put it, that the milk is brainwashing Wonder Woman into living, is that she's like a domestic goddess. She fills her days with shopping and cleaning the house and buying gifts for Steve Trevor and cooking his meals. And so in a way, it's a little bit of a political commentary, the story that Cecil Castellucci is telling about the place of women in society. And it's interesting, right? Because really, with the kind of the gender revolution of the late 50s and 60s, we saw more women enter the workforce and women's lib and all that stuff. It felt like this was something of the past. And then, at least in the US, with what's going on with our current political climate and the whole Me Too movement and everything, it seems like we're taking another step forward. In a way, it's too bad. Not that we're taking a step forward, but that we even have to, is my point. It feels like in the last couple of years, we've taken some steps backward with the political leadership in this country as far as gender equality and all that kind of thing. And, you know, it bothers me. To me, there shouldn't really be much of a difference as far as pay and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, the best person for the job, regardless of gender, is the way I feel about it. But, you know, I know that's looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. And, you know, there's a lot of women that would say, well, we haven't taken it steps backward in the last couple of years. It's just the same fight we've always been fighting. And, you know, I'm not here to argue that one way or the other, but I feel like it's more at the forefront right now, which in a way is good, but again, in a way it's bad because that means that there's still work to be done. So it's interesting that Cecil would tell her story this way, would choose to tell it that way, being that Wonder Woman is such a strong female, feminine, empowering symbol, especially in the DC universe. I mean, she's an icon. So it's great that she awakened, that Shade the Changing Girl is able to awaken her from that. And it'll be interesting to see where the story goes from here. So it was an enjoyable enough story. I think that of all of the first three parts, the Batman War Mother, this part two was probably my favorite. And this is probably comes in right below that. And then the first issue with Doom Patrol and Justice League is probably my least favorite, probably because that one was the hardest one to follow for me. It was just so out there and I was still kind of getting used to the characters and the stage and the setting and everything. So this one was relatively easy to understand. The art by Mirko Andolfo is a little stylized, very much almost like children's comic art, but very, very good. A lot of really cool visuals, and the coloring by Marissa Louise is a little on the primary side, but with a lot of grays, which I really enjoyed. So yeah, I love this book. As I said, normally I don't go in for the kind of weird stuff, but I really did enjoy this one and a lot of the symbolism, and I appreciated a lot of the things that Cecil Castellucci was trying to say in the book. So, you know, I'm almost talking myself into thinking maybe this was my favorite of the three. I mean, it's right there with the War Mother Batman one was really cool. It had a lot of action. This one didn't have a lot of action, but had great character moments. And as I said, a wonderful, wonderful art. So it's worth checking out. If you're a fan of Gerard Way, if you're a fan of his Doom Patrol, you got to really be digging on this Milk Wars crossover because I think it is a perfect example of kind of the joy that he brings to comics, because this is a joyous story. Him and Steve Orlando are having fun telling this story and bringing the other writers like Cecil Castellucci, who did this issue, and I can't remember who did Batman War Mother, but bringing them along for the ride, and you can tell that they're having fun. And you know what I realized as I go to look up the issue? It's Mother Panic, not War Mother. It's Mother Panic is the DC character. War Mother's the Valiant character that's has a series come out recently. You guys are probably out there listening to me going, who the heck is this War Mother DC character he's talking about? No, it's Mother Panic. Mother Panic and Batman. Mother Panic is the fox or cat kind of character that's in the Gerard Way curated Young Animal imprint. And, you know, she's has roots in Gotham and not the same kind of origin of Bruce Wayne, but it was similar enough. And that issue was written by Jody Hauser. So as I said, you can really tell that Steve Orlando, Gerard Way, Cecil Castellucci, Jody Hauser on the Mother Panic Batman issue part two, they're all having fun. It's they're for just fun comics. It's a fun crossover. It's weird and it's out there and I won't pretend that I get it all. But it is fun. You can tell that they're having a lot of fun doing it. So, like I said, if you are a Gerard Way fan or you love that kind of way out there, weird comics kind of stuff, you're going to sure be digging on this. And the art, man, wonderful. cover as well is really cool. It's Wonder Woman. She's recognizable as Wonder Woman. Blue skirt, red blouse, white and gold apron, carrying a glass of milk, pushing a vacuum cleaner, walking through the clouds. It's a surreal image to be sure. So definitely wanted to mention that book. Next up, I'm going to talk about Sideways, written by Dan Didio and Justin Jordan, art by Kenneth Ruckelford, and colors by Daniel Brown. And this is issue number one. So this is part of the DC New Age of Heroes, spinning out of the Dark Knight's metal. And this book, speaking of fun books, this book was a whole heck of a lot of fun too. Before I get into the story itself, let me just say Kenneth Ruckelford, Jaden, who used to be on this podcast, for those longtime listeners, also my son. But, you know, he's 22 now, so sometimes when you're that age, other things take priorities, as they did for me as well. But anyway, Kenneth Ruckelford is Jaden's favorite artist, and I can see why in this issue. Very detailed lines, very kind of fine, thin lines, but very impactful. Great panel layouts, great detail, great facial expressions. I mean, you feel like he pays so much attention. He draws every wrinkle in someone's clothing. He draws every individual hair on their head. That's the kind of craftsman he is. So absolutely love the art. It's completely gorgeous. A couple of the main characters that we're introduced to early on appear to really embrace geek culture. Like, they have a lot of anime stuff and video games and comics and posters on the wall of their bedroom. And Ruckelford does a great job of putting those details in the background. So really love that. As far as the story itself, we're meeting our main character, Derek. Through the course of the story, we learn that him and his mother were in Gotham when the events of Dark Knight's Metal number one happened. Basically, that Challenger's Mountain springing up in the middle of the city. Derek was separated from his mother, fell through the mountain, quote unquote, and comes out the other side with powers, the ability to teleport, to create these rifts and teleport. So think Nightcrawler in a way, but we don't know about the side effects of the power yet. You know, we know that in Nightcrawler's case, you know, there's a bamf sound and there's the smell of fire and brimstone. We learn through the course of this issue there is some sort of side effect, because there's somebody that's trying to stop Derek from teleporting because he feels that the side effects are going to affect reality. In what way and exactly what's going on there, we don't know yet. It's left kind of a cliffhanger ending. We'll find out next issue, I'm hoping. But the story so far is intriguing. It's fun. Derek seems to be... Well, it's interesting. He seems to be a fun character when he's in the Sideways costume or when he's talking to his one close friend. As opposed to, we see a few pages of him at school. He's very much introverted. People are whispering behind his back, you know, oh, he got caught in that disaster in Gotham and that kind of thing. So almost think early Spider-Man, where Parker was a bit introverted at school and really got to be his true self when he put on the Spider-Man costume. So I don't know if Justin Jordan and Dan Didio are specifically going for that feel, but that's the feel that I got. And it wouldn't surprise me if they're kind of trying to channel that early Spider-Man feel. And the costume doesn't look like Spider-Man, you know, overtly. But it is kind of like a skin-tight costume that completely covers his face, you know, like a whole-body unitard and a mask that covers his face. And the costume design is really, really cool. So looking forward to that. So there wasn't a whole lot of action in the first issue, but there's a lot to unpack here. I think it's a really good first issue in that it does a great job of introducing some of the main characters. You know, Derek, his parents, what looks to be his best friend, his best friend's sister, some of the characters at his high school, and this mysterious person that seems to be able to talk to Derek as he's teleporting from place to place to place to place all through there, and then shows up on the last page. So great example of a first issue of hooking you right away. Like, there's no way I couldn't read Sideways issue 2 after reading issue 1, especially with the Kenneth Rocafort art. So I definitely recommend this. You know, when Justin Jordan was on the podcast a few weeks ago, I asked him about it, and he specifically said he thinks it's going to be just a really fun book. That's what they're kind of going after. And I'm definitely glad I picked it up. It's really, really cool. So I certainly recommend that. I mean, just for the Kenneth Rocafort art alone, it's worth picking up. But yeah, great story, great start, great introduction to the character. Can't wait to see where the story goes from here. Last book I'm going to talk about, G.I. Joe number 248, written by Larry Hama, art by Netho Diaz, inks by Tiago Gomez, and colors by Milan Parvanov, P-A-R-V-A-N-O-V. Sorry for butchering that, Milan. So this is interesting in that it's a silent issue. And for those of you longtime G.I. Joe fans, you'll remember, I think it was G.I. Joe 21 way back in the day, was a story, Snake Eyes story, and it was told without any dialogue, any word balloons, any dialogue boxes, none of that. Completely silent issue, no words. And they've done that a few times over the years since then, and they're going back to it now. What happens is the art really has to tell the story, and man, the art by Netho Diaz is incredible in this issue. For those that aren't up on G.I. Joe, spoilers, Snake Eyes is dead. The original Snake Eyes is supposedly dead, and there was a teenage girl by the name of Dawn Moreno who accidentally got implanted with the memories of Snake Eyes. And for the last 20 issues or so, it's been a running thread, plot thread, kind of what's been happening to her as she tries to reconcile those memories with who she is. I mean, she was already had been recruited by Cobra because she was such an incredible athlete. And she was being trained to be an operative for Cobra. Then you throw in the knowledge and the abilities and memories of Snake Eyes. As you can imagine, she's pretty formidable. And this issue, as I said, silent issue, she's in Japan. She's taking on the Red Ninjas, not even necessarily for reasons that she understands, because again, she's almost living, it's almost like Snake Eyes is living through her. So, as I said, the art by Netho Diaz is really incredible. It doesn't need dialogue. It really doesn't. They're incredible action scenes. I love the way he varies the angles and the inset panels he does. And the other cool thing about it is, so while Dawn Moreno with Snake Eyes Memories is in Japan, she's taking on these Red Ninjas, she's flashing back to when Snake Eyes was there in Japan doing the same thing. And so those pages are interspersed in with Dawn's kind of running the gauntlet against the Red Ninjas. We see Snake Eyes doing the same. And those pages are they're colored with kind of sepia tones, you know, so there's kind of a brown wash over it. So that not that we wouldn't know we're looking at Snake Eyes and not Dawn Moreno, because clearly they're different characters and they look different. But it's very much a brutal issue. It's very visceral. There's a lot of, you know, swords and blood and explosions, and it's awesome. It would be great to own some original art from this issue, definitely. But the other reason I wanted to talk about this is because people have been sleeping on G.I. Joe for a long time. You know, Larry Hama, he's written this series for a long time, decades, you know, from back in the 80s. And I think the original G.I. Joe run at Marvel ended with 152, and then it was at Devil's Due for a while, and it was at Image for a while, and now it's over at IDW. And there's been different versions of G.I. Joe, but this number 248, this particular series, you know, Hama went back to it and he picked up with issue 153 and just kept telling the tale of the Joes. The same Joes, the same version of the G.I. Joe characters that he has been telling all along. So if there's any negative I would give about it, it's that there are so many characters. There's no way that everybody can get a chance to shine. But Hama does a good job of moving characters in and out of the spotlight. and trying to give them all some time in the sun. With fewer characters, I think it would be easier for him, and we would also get a little more depth of character. Sometimes I feel like some of the characters aren't fleshed out as much, but at the same time, if you go and read his whole series, you really do start to understand who the individual characters are. It just makes, I mean, that's a lot of books to go back and read, decades worth of comics. But a lot of people have been sleeping on G.I. Joe until recently with, you know, the death of Snake Eyes generated some buzz and some press, at least in the comics press, because he's such a beloved character. And now that he's kind of returning in a way through this version of Snake Eyes, this Don Moreno version, it's generating some buzz as well. And this recent story arc that's been focused on her, they've been selling out. So that's another part of the reason I wanted to talk about it on the podcast. It's Dawn of the Arasha Cage, part 3. It's countdown to 250, which I'm sure is going to be an anniversary issue and probably will wrap up the origin or the Don Moreno coming out party, if that's how you want to put it. Her first appearance was in 226, and that's really where this subplot started running. And that's the other thing that's cool about this G.I. Joe series. You know, Larry Hama's old school. He doesn't write for the trade, you know, not the way that some of the more modern writers write, or, you know, the way they're directed to write by editorial. And, you know, it just seems ever since Brian Michael Bendis came around with Ultimate Spider-Man, we've lost some of that long-form storytelling with plot threads that run, you know, 3, 4, 6 months in the background and then eventually come to the fore. So it's great to see that, you know, 226, Hama obviously had this idea in his head already. You know, that's 22 issues ago. So almost 2 years ago, he started, you know, here's Don Moreno, and then just tell a little bit of her story at a time, to where it's now her time to be, you know, center stage with this Dawn of the Arasha Cage storyline. So it's a silent issue. Go pick it up. It's worth it. As I said, they're doing reprints of, I think, from 245, 246, 247. So 245 is kind of the prologue to this five-part storyline. And then, obviously, 246 and 247 are parts 1 and 2. So they're doing reprints. You probably can go and find them, ask your person at your comic shop to order them for you or find them digitally and get on board with this new Snake Eyes. You know, I was really surprised when they killed Snake Eyes. I mean, I was shocked because he was such a, you know, beloved character, as I said. So for them to bring him back this way, and Dawn's been an interesting character, and she's really kind of coming into her own. So I wanted to give her due by talking about G.I. Joe issue 248 here. So those are the books I think are worth picking up this week. Let me do a quick rundown of some other titles I think you might be interested in. From Aftershock Comics, we have Animosity Evolution number 4. We also have Cold War number 1, which is a great, great start to a new series, much like Sideways is. Probably going to be 5-6 issues or so. I've actually read issues 1 and 2, had the writer Christopher Sabala on the podcast this last Monday for Aftershock Monday. It's a really interesting take. Go listen to the Aftershock Monday episode and make sure you pick up Cold War when you get into your comic shop this Wednesday. Also from Aftershock, a couple of trades, Volume 1 of Jimmy's Bastards and Volume 1 of Pestilence. Over at DC Comics, the March to Action Comics 1000 continues with number 997. We also have Suicide Squad number 35. And for those of you who read Damage number 1, you know that at the end of that issue, Suicide Squad shows up. Well, Damage does a cameo in this. It's not a direct crossover. I imagine that the events of Damage number 2 may even come before Suicide Squad 35, but Damage does make an appearance in this issue. Over at Image Comics, we have Curse Words number 11 from Ryan Brown and Charles Soule. Continues to be a really fun series. Also of particular note, and I almost talked about this, but I'm a little behind and I didn't want to rush the reading. just so I could talk about this issue, but it's Invincible number 144. That is the final issue of Invincible, so definitely the end of an era. And I'm sure at some point we'll do some Invincible spotlights, if only to just introduce more readers to how incredible that story is. One of the best superhero comics of the past decade, I'd say, without a doubt. Also from Image and Top Cow is Port of Earth number 4 from Zach Kaplan and Andrea Muti. I'll be talking about that on tomorrow's podcast, the Top Cow Thursday, so stay tuned for that. And over at Marvel, we have Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 42. We have Avengers number 675 second print. So that's the first part of the No Surrender storyline when Avengers went weekly. And the weekly issue for this week is number 680. So that's been a really popular story. It's been selling really well. You know, Marvel ended all the other various Avengers titles, you know, US Avengers and Secret Avengers and whatever other Avengers. I mean, they had so many different Avengers titles. Now there's just the one Avengers title, but it's coming out weekly. So you're getting your fix weekly. And Mark Wade, Jim Zub, some other writers working together on it. And it seems to be doing really, really well. So if you missed out on the first part, you know, 675 sold out, you slept on it, here's a chance to go pick up the new printing. And as I said, the new part of the story, part five, I guess, Avengers 680 is on stands as well. Also, if you missed out on Phoenix Resurrection, The Return of Jean Grey number 1, there's a second printing of that coming out tomorrow. Star Wars Darth Vader number 11 comes out tomorrow. That's been a really well-selling title for Marvel. And also, if you're a Star Wars fan, Star Wars Thrawn number 1 comes out tomorrow. And I know that he's a very popular character from the first novels that came out after the original trilogy by Timothy Zahn is where Thrawn was introduced, and he's been a very popular character ever since. I think people keep waiting for him to show up in the movies, but we know these Marvel Star Wars comics are canon, so it'd be interesting to see what story of Thrawn that they're going to be telling in this particular issue. Also, I want to mention from Marvel, well, before I do that, I'll mention that Thrawn, Star Wars Thrawn is written by Jody Houser with art by Luke Ross. And then also from Marvel, if you missed out on the X-Men Grand Design number 1 and 2 by Ed Piskor, there's second printings of both of those issues out tomorrow. I know a lot of people slept on that, didn't pre-order, and it sold out really, really quickly. It was going for a premium on eBay. And finally from Valiant Comics, I talked about both these issues on the Valiant Comics Sunday this last week. It's Bloodshot number 6 and Ninjak or Ninja K number 4. So that's going to do it for this episode of New Comics Wednesday. Hope you all enjoyed it. Hope you get out to your local comic book shop and get to pick up your books before taking your special someone out on the town for Valentine's Day. Thanks for joining me. Don't forget to go to thecomicsourceblog.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Do a search on Facebook and Instagram for The Comic Source to keep up to date on our convention coverage. Also, twitter.com/thecomicsource is where you can follow us on Twitter. Make sure you're keeping up to date when all the new episodes come out. Don't forget, as I mentioned earlier in the show, about our exclusive podcast for LRM Online, the 9-panel grid. And while you're over there at LRM Online, be sure to check out all their other pop culture coverage. So thanks for joining me, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.